From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Brian Grady of Pro Farmer, he's the editor of the newsletter and the leader of the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, will join us. At 1:30 today, Pro Farmer dropped out their actual yield estimates, really projections for this year, not from the tour, but the Pro Farmer estimates, so we'll get those from him. And a bit later in the program, we'll check the agricultural weather forecast to that with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible, and he'll join us right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Either way, the numbers finished in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. September corn at 316 and a quarter, down 7 1/4. December 325, down 7. September soybeans 7.5 lower at $9.90¾. November at 967¼, down 8¼. Bean oil up 4 cents. Bean meal down $3.10. The September soft red winter wheat 17¾ lower at 383½. July there at 455¾, down 14¼. Hard red July 14½ cents lower at $4.53¾¢. Live cattle futures in the August down $2.45. October 232½ lower at $106.20. And the feeder cattle in the October down $2 even at $136.10. The December lean hogs $56.60 up $2.12½. October there up $2.62½ at $61.32½. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at these markets. Thanks so much for being with us, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, well, I want to go someplace with you today that I think you'll like, because you like to talk about wheat, and there is just a lot of this crop around, and it's been making new lows, and that can't be good news for other grains, I would think. What do you see in this marketplace?
Yeah, you remember Christmas Vacation and Cousin Eddie towards the end, he said about the Jelly of the Month Club, it's the gift that just keeps on giving, Clark. That's kind of how I see the wheat market right now, Ty. It's just a gift you just don't want. And I think what you see going on in all seriousness is we just cannot seem to get any Middle Eastern business. And I think what's even worse than that is we're not even tendering when Egypt puts out bids. And it seems like Russia and Romania continue to dominate the market. And this is even though our soft red wheat at the Gulf right now is about $5 a ton cheaper than the Black Sea main port wheat FOB. And so I think it goes back to the trade is simply at this point taking the market down into the September 2006 lows with the idea that we're not going to stop until we see a Middle Eastern sale, or we're going to until we see a good sale, because USDA's bumped up the demand in wheat in this last report, you know, less than 2 weeks ago. We haven't seen much of that. Export sales are okay, but we just haven't seen that the United States is coming to the front of the pack or the top of the heap when it comes to tender. So as a result, we saw the wheat corn spread this week drop about 30% on the week, going from about 93 cents down to 67 cents. And I think that does a lot to explain why the corn market was not able to find any support from a lot of good pro farmer tour numbers. And then obviously today going back down to 170 bushels, shaving 425 million bushels, inferring that off the production and therefore off the carryover, we still saw corn go within 2 cents of its report day low last week.
Yeah, so those numbers, and we'll get a full accounting of them from Brian Grady here in a few minutes, are lower than what USDA had in August. Do you think that these numbers will be reflected in the September USDA report at all?
I did look back with some help from some colleagues in Chicago. We did some teaming up on some spreadsheets, and it did look like Pro Farmer did come in with about a 4.5 bushel lighter number in their tour for the national yield last year compared to USDA's 168.8. Pro Farmer came in at 164.3, and USDA did drop the September yield by about 1.3 bushels. And so taking that, I noticed that of the states that really are looked at in the Pro Farmer Tour, six of the seven were lower than the state estimate by USDA this year. Only four of the seven were lower in 2015. So I think there's a high likelihood based upon that methodology that we will see the USDA cut the yield in the September report in the corn. And that maybe will then start to wake the market up to the idea that maybe a small crop gets smaller. But if Pro Farmer and some of us others out there that are around 170, 171 right now are correct, that 425 million bushels of ending stocks in the United States translates into about 11 million tons of world corn carryover. You can pull off the ending stocks number. That takes you back down to no more than what we had last year, right around that 209, 210 million metric ton number. That'd be very, very healthy, I think, for the whole feed grain complex and probably allow the corn to support the wheat for a change.
Yeah, so what would it give us, another 25 or 30 cents in the corn market, maybe?
I would suspect it could give us more than that, depending on if the wheat made a low. I mean, this is a very similar market to what we experienced in 2006, 2007 still, and it wasn't until the wheat made a low in 2007 that the corn was able to really turn on the afterburners, and we saw a really nice move up in 07 and in 14. In 07, I think it really let the wheat was letting the corn go because the wheat had put in a nice low. So I would say probably 40 cents conservatively if we drop below 2 million bushels on U.S. ending stocks with this kind of demand we're talking about, and we see a sideways dollar, Todd. But I think you could go maybe all the way back up close to $4 a bushel by expiration, kind of like what we did in December of 2014 when the crop got tighter.
Now, tied down week in the November beans and a big crop, according to USDA and Pro Farmer, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think this is where the inferred number from the pod count is taking you up about 33 million bushels in ending stocks from USDA's number, so you're up over 350 again in the trade's mind. That opens up the door to that August 2nd low of 943 as maybe being needed to be tested here in the not-too-distant future. I think one of the things about the beans that we'll have to watch, one of the more supportive features other than the demand side, is what's going on in the Delta. I continue to get very strong indications, but nothing concrete, that there are some problems down in the Delta with getting beans out, getting corn out, that beans are underwater, and maybe some parishes in Louisiana on Monday's crop report suggested that as much as 40% of their acres in some parishes of beans could be lost. So we need to watch that cash and that Gulf basis price for beans and corn maybe next week, now that we have the spotlight off USDA's numbers and Pro Farmer's numbers.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Any final word from you before I let you go?
Well, you know, Janet Yellen spoke today, and that was part of the reason why we found some selling, I think, in the commodities, because the dollar found a bottom. But she noted specifically that we've had soft demand because of the appreciation in the dollar. So in my opinion, having read about two-thirds of her commentary, I think the Fed, generally speaking, doesn't want to take interest rates any lower, and they do want some inflation, and that means they don't want a stronger dollar at this point.
Thanks much, Mike.
You bet. Thanks, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzalos with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In today's agricultural news, with the 4-3 ruling, the Illinois Supreme Court has upheld a Cook County Circuit Court decision on the independent map amendment. The citizen initiative amendment will not be placed on the November ballot. The court ruling was a political party line decision favoring Democrats. The legal arguments were based on whether the ballot measure met the constitutional requirements of being structural and procedural to the state's legislature. The ruling did not surprise Kevin Simlow of the Illinois Farm Bureau.
The outcome does not, because the Constitution and the way it is written, with trying to narrowly define what a structural and procedural change is for the General Assembly, it's very difficult to get a question to the final ballot and through that. So it wasn't a complete surprise, but it's still disappointing.
The vice president of the Illinois Farm Bureau sits on the board of directors for the Independent Map Amendment Coalition that put forward the ballot measure. It would have asked Illinois voters if political districts should be drawn by an independent commission. Let's stay with politics, but move to the national level. Donald Trump yesterday pledged to lay out his exact plan on immigration over the next week after his recent remarks indicated his position on undocumented immigrants in the U.S. was softening. The Republican presidential nominee, during a meeting with Black and Latino activists at the Trump Tower in Manhattan, said he will make a speech that people will have great respect for. While the apparent policy shift is causing many of Trump's conservative allies to squirm, it's good news for agriculture, which wants to ensure that any overhaul of the immigration system allows the current workforce to stay in the United States and streamlines the process for hiring foreign labor. Farmers are facing major labor shortages and coping with what the industry says is an unreliable visa system administered by the labor and state departments to bring in workers to man their operations. Let's move internationally now, but with some not-so-positive news for agriculture. Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Congress will not take action on the TPP trade deal this year. Speaking in an event in his home state hosted by the Kentucky Farm Bureau, McConnell signaled the agreement could still be worked out in future years, further dimming the TPP's chance of coming to a vote before the end of President Barack Obama's administration. The current agreement, the Trans-Pacific Agreement, which has some serious flaws, will not be acted upon this year, McConnell said, but it will still be around. It can be managed, changed, worked on during the next administration, he thinks. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In the last hour, the pro-farmer folks released their estimates, projections, really, of the U.S. corn and soybean crops, based in part off the pro-farmer Midwest crop tour. The leader of the eastern leg of that tour and the editor of the newsletter is Brian Grady. We've talked with him all week long. He now joins us with the final numbers, not from the crop tour, but the projections from pro-farmer. What'd you come up with for corn and soybean around the nation?
Well, on the corn crop, we put the production at 14.728 billion bushels, a national average yield of 170.2, so 170.2 bushels per acre. And on soybeans, we put it at 4.093 billion bushels, an average yield of 49.3 bushels per acre. On the corn, we use a range plus or minus 1%, so that takes it on the low end from 14.581 billion bushels up to 14.875 billion bushels on the top end, and the yield would be range would be 168.5 bushels per acre to 171.9 bushels per acre. Soybeans, we put a plus or minus 2% range on, and that puts it from a range of 4.011 billion bushels to 4.175 billion bushels. The yield on that would be 48.3 bushels per acre to 50.3 bushels per acre.
Historically, how accurate are these numbers compared to the final numbers USDA projects?
Well, recently we've had some hits and we've had some misses, but we get the trend right, I think, in the most case. And so that's really what we focus on. But I will say that in the corn crop, it's easier to estimate a mature crop. And we do have some of the area this year that's much more mature than what it normally would be. Other areas are about normal, and some areas are even lagging a little bit behind what would be normal. So I can't say it's anything really one thing in terms of maturity across the Corn Belt this year. In the third week of August, it's extremely hard to estimate what the soybean crop is going to be. There's still a lot of variables that come into play there. So soybeans by far are the harder of the two, and that's why we put a plus or minus 2% range on it, whereas corn has a plus or minus 1% range.
It looks from the USDA numbers that Iowa and Minnesota will be where this crop turns. Can you tell me about the variability that you found there and the differences between what USDA produced and what you found?
Sure. So in Iowa, we'll start there, and that's my home state. So, you know, I've seen it. I live in northeast Iowa, and I've seen that crop all season long here. It looks great from the road. We've had timely rains. It's green. It's lush. Just been close to perfect growing conditions, seemingly. But, you know, when we got out in fields, on the eastern half of the state anyway. We got in there, and there were some skips and rows. There were some blank stocks, and that caught me by surprise a little bit because it wasn't as good a couple rows in as what it looks like from the road. And then we go past the end rows in another 35 paces. So by the time we got in that deep into the field, in a lot of these cases, we did have some of those skips and blank stocks, like I said. So what's a very good corn crop in Iowa? I mean, it's a very, very good crop. It could have been an absolute monster if we wouldn't have had those skips and blank stocks in there.
Your 4 bushels under USDA for Iowa. For Minnesota, however, USDA is at 184 and you have a 175 number. There's a pretty good size disparity of 9 bushels there.
Yeah, we just weren't real impressed with that with the Minnesota crop, to be honest with you. I think several factors came into play. They had a frost freeze event around mid-May. That probably had an impact on some of their stands there. And then through the south central portion of the state, they had multiple rain events, heavy rains, that I think when you add that all up, it kind of took a toll on the crop, and we just didn't come away as impressed with it as what we anticipated, quite honestly, going in. And that caused us to lean down there pretty heavily from what USDA was projecting that at.
And then here in the great state of Illinois, and I don't think you'll find too much of a difference of opinion from farmers on this one. You're 6 bushels below what USDA currently is at 200 bushels. You're at 194. What made the difference?
Well, you heard me say it all along, and this isn't the 2014 corn crop in the state of Illinois. I don't believe so anyway. And, you know, our tour numbers back that up, and then so we took that into account, and then we took other factors into account. We don't go into southern Illinois, and in 2014, southern Illinois, that bottom quarter to third of the state that we don't get into, did not pull down yields in 2014. The crop was extremely uniform that year. There's more variability this year, and I think that the southern portion of the state will pull it down this year as a whole. And as a result, we did lean down by those 6 bushels per acre from what USDA estimated on August 1.
Ohio and South Dakota were lower. However, it's Nebraska where the biggest disappointments seem to be. What did your number show there?
Well, in Nebraska, they had green snap issues, and scouts, every scout I talked to over there, and that's on the western leg, so I didn't see it personally, but every one of those scouts that I talked to mentioned the green snap and how prevalent it was. The other thing is the irrigated samples over there did not help as much as they typically would. Typically you would have a pretty significant spread between your dry land samples and your irrigated samples. And this year it was probably about half of the difference of what it normally would be over there. So the irrigated didn't pull up this year. It probably is going to limit the yield potential there, and that's the result of why we came in where we did for Nebraska.
The bean crop, however, was really good in Nebraska, it appears.
Yeah, and typically Nebraska producers know how to grow really good soybeans, and they've mastered the art of not making the plant too big and bushy, and yet having the ability to put on pods, so you know, especially in those irrigated soybeans over there. So once again, a good bean crop coming out of the state of Nebraska.
Just to give you the state by states, Nebraska at 59 bushels to the acre, South Dakota 42, Minnesota 48, Iowa and Illinois both at 58.5 bushel to the acre on the pro farmer projections, Indiana at 55, and Ohio, not so bad as well, at 50 bushels to the acre. Rainfall making the difference, and August has been good, I suppose, to the soybean crop across the Midwest, hasn't it?
Definitely. We always say that if we get our boots muddy on crop tour, that it's a good thing for the soybean crop, and that's you know, part of the reason why we leaned up there on our estimate compared to what USDA had on August 1. We feel like definitely there's a soil moisture there for the crop to finish strong. Pod counts, you know, they, like I mentioned, they were variable, but I think there's enough pods out there, and this moisture will allow them to plump up. So it looks like it should be a fairly good finish for the soybean crop across the Corn Belt.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much for doing this today and for being with us all week long. Really do appreciate it here, and I know the listeners do too.
You bet. My pleasure.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agrible, and we are looking at the weather forecast. Eric, let's start with the tornadoes in Indiana. What happened?
Yeah, that was a surprise event. We essentially had a weak boundary that kind of pushed through Illinois early in the morning. This would be on the 24th. And then by the time that boundary got into Indiana, it was kicking off these storms. And because of the wind shear profile, they began to rotate, as supercells do, and then many of them produced tornadoes. And when it was all said and done, that was 35 reports of tornadoes. Now, for perspective, this will probably be one of the largest tornado outbreaks in August in U.S. history that we can think back on. Worst damage that we saw was probably in Kokomo, where they had an EF3 tornado. That's producing wind speeds probably in the neighborhood of about 150 miles an hour. We're still getting a lot of the damage surveys in today, though. I did see quite a bit of crop damage, though, several aerial photographs of cornfields laid flat by some of this corn. But, you know, when you kind of take that and put it into the bigger picture of what's been going on across the Corn Belt, the big thing is that it's been wet. We've had a lot of repeated thunderstorm activity, and basically the setup has been a trough, you know, kind of in the west and in a ridge kind of over the southeast, and that's been pushing a lot of low-pressure systems and frequent frontal passages through our region for the last couple of weeks. As a result, our rain and storm chances have been high, and we've been getting them. And that continues, actually, all the way through the weekend. You know, we will see temperatures in the mid-80s, but, boy, there's a pretty good chance for rain again tonight and then again on Saturday and even into Sunday. We've even got storms going right now in southern Illinois and Missouri and even some stuff out in western Illinois. So all this has been, it's been wet, keeping the crops green. But I'll say probably the best impact for this has been on the bean crop. You know, we've been keeping a close tab on the Pro Farmer Tour as they're going around and looking across the Corn Belt and what yields look like. And while they have certainly come down in their estimates based upon a comparison between them and the USDA for corn yields, which we certainly expect here at Agribull for them to do, you know, the tall bean crop was going to be very susceptible to heat and dry conditions in August, and it just didn't happen. The heat was kept at bay, had plenty of precipitation, so we're expecting this bean crop to be pretty big. So a lot of neat things going on in ag right now in that regard.
Hey, one other item that we ought to take up. I've asked about this a couple of times over the last week or so. It really is kind of hurricane season. Anything to keep an eye on?
Yeah, you're right about it being hurricane season. So the climatological peak in hurricane activity is around September 10th, September 11th. And right now we're seeing a lot of activity in the Western Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico and in the Caribbean. I'll tell you, it is primed. The sea surface temperatures are warm. For the most part, wind shear is low, and that's all good for hurricanes. So we're watching this thing that's called right now 99L. It gets that name from the National Hurricane Center. It's an area of active tropical thunderstorms. We call them tropical waves, but they're not waves in the ocean. Tropical waves in the flow of the atmosphere that we're keeping a close eye on. 99L just spent yesterday going over the island of Hispaniola. It's now trying to make its way toward Bermuda, where the sea surface temperatures are warm. But unlike a hurricane or even a tropical storm, the circulation isn't fully closed off yet. And where it is, it's very small and confined. So we got to keep an eye on this, because if it follows some of the forecast models into the Gulf of Mexico, there's the potential for it to get some, you know, gain some strength and basically hit the southeastern United States with, you know, with maybe as a tropical storm. It's a lot of this is still up in the air. I'm not worried about the winds right now. I'm really worried about the rain. Remember, we had a lot of rain in the Gulf. You know, Louisiana just finished a week where they had over 2 feet of rain, right, going back the last 10 days. So as this kind of moves through, we got to watch for Florida, got to watch for the southeast, because its biggest threat is probably going to be precipitation moving forward throughout this week. So keep an eye on the tropics, because next 6 to 8 weeks, you know, as we go toward harvest, you know, a tropical system could make its way up the mid-Mississippi Valley, like Hurricane Ike did in 2008, and dump a lot of rain in this part of the world.
Hey, thanks, Eric. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agribull, joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.